Welcome, everyone, to another edition of the Outdoor Citizen Podcast. Your host today, Marty Jones, and my guests are Dwayne Bussey and Doug Camp from the San Luis Valley chapter of Trout Unlimited. As always, we want to be certain to thank our friend Don Richmond for the music that you're listening to, and also Daniel Boyce for the bird songs. So thank you guys, and thanks to Dwayne and Doug for coming in to spend some time talking about Trout Unlimited and fishing in the San Luis Valley.
It's great to be here, Marty.
Yeah, happy to be here, Marty.
Okay, so the first voice you heard was Doug, and the second voice was Dwayne. If you could see them, you'd be able to tell the difference between them. But since this is an audio podcast, you're just going to have to rely on the difference in voice.
Just say Doug's the point guard and I'm the power forward.
Yeah, or when we go fishing together, Dwayne takes one step and I take three.
That's a good one.
Yeah, actually, that's pretty accurate. So Doug is the president of our local San Luis Valley chapter of Trout Unlimited, and Dwayne is the treasurer. Guys, please tell us a little bit about Trout Unlimited in general, and then some about the San Luis Valley chapter specifically.
All right. You want to start?
Well, I'll kick it off with the mission right off the website, and they've modified it here just in the last year. It says, to bring together diverse interests to care for and recover rivers and streams, so our children can experience the joy of wild and native trout and salmon. And I love the piece about diverse interests and for our children, leaving something for them.
Yeah.
Started in 1959 back in Michigan, and chapters all across the country. And for a small community, Doug, we've got a very strong chapter here in the San Luis Valley.
We have an exceedingly strong chapter. And I might add to what Dwayne was saying is, when you examine Trout Unlimited for us here in the Valley, it's a kind of a three-tier thing. We have National TU out of Washington, D.C., which is very influential in lobbying for large-scale environmental concerns. And then underneath that is Colorado Trout Unlimited, which is who we more often answer to if they're state-related items. And they do a number of projects throughout the state to enhance habitat, to increase more members, especially to spread education to the younger people that are interested in the water and in fly fishing. And I include from like big enough to walk in the stream to old enough to cast a fly rod. And then there's our individual chapter. And as Dwayne said, it's a really, for the population size of the Valley, we have a super strong chapter.
And there have been numerous projects within the San Luis Valley that have really helped to fulfill the overall mission of Trout Unlimited.
Yeah, part of those, Marty, are educational projects, as Doug was talking about, with the not just with kids, but with lots of diverse groups and developing partnerships with not only the environmental community, but the ranching and farming community, with the other recreational communities. We've got a full-time rep, Kevin Terry, here that's stationed in the Valley with Trout Unlimited. He's done a great job of building partnerships with other water users across the Valley to try to ensure that there's a little more water in the streams to create a healthier fishing environment. But we've done some physical projects in our streams and rivers. Some of them are on small creeks, and some of them have been on the Rio Grande and the Canoas.
Yeah, and we have a number of projects going on right now. Many of them center on Rio Grande cutthroat trout. We have a habitat improvement project on Jim Creek, which flows into Lahara Reservoir. And there we've gone in and successfully removed some of the brook trout. There's still quite a few brook trout in there. And we have a very interesting fishing tournament, which occurs on that stream that anybody can be a part of if you like to catch brook trout and eat them or eradicate them, as the case may be. We've been very involved with the project over on the east side of the Sangre de Cristos. over on the Sand Dunes Preserve. That's Sand Creek. And that is going to be just a really nice setup when we get it all done. The lakes have been cleared of of invasive species, and now we're starting to work downstream. If we get a summer where we don't have too much water, like we did last year for monsoons, this year it's for the snowpack, then they'll be able to finish that up. And then I just read in the paper that CPW, although we haven't been asked formally to be a part of it, I'm sure we will be, is going to do the same for El Rito.
Rito Hondo,
pardon me, yeah.
Yeah, up above Creed.
Right, and they'll actually turn that reservoir into a broodstock reservoir. So we kind of have our hands a lot now in the pie with our native species, the Rio Grande Cutthroat.
And the Rio Grande Cutthroat is native to our region. There's three cutthroats native to Colorado, and we've got the Rio Grande Cutthroat. So as there's been, you know, more environmental pressures, more people out, trying to take care of these rare species has become a point of concern for Trout Unlimited and lots of people.
Right. And the Rio Grande Cutthroats don't recognize the invisible state boundary. So they are native to northern New Mexico as well.
Yes.
And the New Mexico chapter of Trout Unlimited has done quite a bit to enhance Rio Grande cuts in that part of our San Luis Valley. Because really, the San Luis Valley is not limited to just Colorado. It includes New Mexico as well.
Certainly.
In fact, we have done, our chapter has participated in stocking of Rio Grande cuts in the Rio Grande, in the wild and scenic rivers section in New Mexico.
Yeah.
So have you guys had a chance to get out and do any fishing this year? How does it, and if so, how does it compare to years past?
I had a chance to get out just a little bit early before the runoff came through, and the fishing for me was okay. I usually like to float tube a little bit, and didn't get a chance to do as much of that as I normally do. And then the high water hit, and it's kind of these colder temperatures, so it was a little more challenging on the river, but I've been out a couple times in the last few weeks, and it's getting a lot better.
Good.
Yeah, I spent the better part of the entire week last week fishing, Marty. My wife was gone, which left me free to be a trout bum, which is what I excel at. I did quite a bit of fishing. Before that, the 2 weeks before, I dabbled a little bit. But as we were talking earlier before we started the recording, the water has not only been high, it's been really cool. And those cold temperatures keep the bugs from really getting active. They really kind of keep the fish from getting super active as well. I mean, they're still in the bottom of the stream looking and eating. But, of course, a great hatch brings them into the shallows and into the surface areas where they're easier for us to catch. But it's a really different season this year, totally different.
In the very recent past, like 2018, 2019, and before that, the water temperatures were a lot warmer than they are now. And I know that our chapter was involved in hoot owl rules, trying to encourage people to not fish when the water temperature rose above a certain level. And to be quite honest, I can anticipate later this year that may be the case as well.
If we don't get any sort of a monsoon, I think you're absolutely right.
We've been blessed with that great snowpack, though. So far, temps are still really good and the water levels are holding. So I think we have a good chance to not have much of that impact.
That would be great if it didn't.
And those hoot owl rules were basically get off the stream by 12, 2 o'clock. 1 o'clock, something like that, when the water temperature started to warm up. Because if you catch a fish when the temperatures are that high and it fights you and you let it go, then its chances of not making it are much higher.
Yeah. And to that point, a lot of times if you're a pretty dedicated fly fisherman and you fish the hatches around here, at least this part of the world, are morning hatches. So by about 12 o'clock or 1 o'clock, someone kind of, the imaginary finger goes over to the wall and switches to the hatch is off. Mm-hmm. And it literally can be like that. I've been standing in the water before just catching a lot of fish and bugs flying around everywhere. And then it's just nothing. And it's time. We're full. The bugs are gone. The fish are gone. They're not gone. They're just not eating.
I have made the mistake in the past of stopping for lunch around 12:30, something like that. Take a little break. And the fishing was good up to that point. And then after lunch, you get in the water. And it's just like you said, Doug, a switch got turned off.
Yeah.
You just learned to eat while you're fishing. And then if you're going to sit down and take a break, wait till they stop.
Yep. Yep. I'd like to think that perhaps I have learned that, but but it took me a while before I figured it out. So unlike other states in the Midwest and in the eastern part of the U.S., Colorado has no season opening date or anything of that sort. So you can fish for trout all year round, right?
Yeah.
Have you guys done some winter fly fishing in the state of Colorado?
I've done very little, Mark. There's in the valley itself, it's a little bit harder to find open river water for sure. There are some parts of the state where you can get out in January and find some open water. And those are usually tailwaters below a dam somewhere. But I haven't done much of that.
I used to fish in the winter a lot. A whole bunch. And like Dwayne said, trying to find tailwaters can be very helpful. It doesn't have to be a big tailwater. It's a tailwater I used to fish over near San Luis, and some of the listeners will know exactly which stream I'm talking about.
We're not going to identify it by name.
Wow. Yeah, that's right.
It's a secret group.
We might get in trouble with our constituents. I would usually not fish it until, say, February. December and January are the 2 months that are really difficult. It's super cold. The brown trout have spawned, and although they may be pretty super hungry, they kind of behave strangely, I believe. And so it's about February when I start looking for those bright, sunny days that have occurred two or three in a row. And I know then that the water temperature is coming up. And usually there's a class of insects, the midges, the diptera, which are basically a cousin to a mosquito. Mosquitoes a diptera too. And these little guys come out in the cold weather. They're very hardy. And the fish will get over in pretty shallow, slow-moving water where they don't have to displace much effort. And the sun's rays really warms them up. And they sip on these little insects because they come up on the surface and it takes them a long time to fly away sometimes. That's always a good thing to look for. And I'm almost always successful with that if I just will be patient, pick the day after there's a lot of sunshine, and hunt carefully.
So we might not share specific locations, but I would ask, based on what you just told me, midges are pretty small insects, or at least for the most part, they're pretty small. What is the secret to being able to see a fish take a size 22 or 24 fly? This is for either one of you.
Well, I would say if you're dragging it behind a dry fly, you wait for the dry fly to go underwater, and it means it's probably eating your midge, or having a strike indicator. Which is basically a little float, like a bobber, that's above your fly a little bit. When that goes underwater, it moves. There's a chance that it's eaten. Or if you're a good Euro nymph fisherman, you just have developed the touch and the feel for when the fish has the fly in its mouth.
But it's, you know, I've worked a little bit as a guide, and one of the things I learned pretty quickly is it's not so important to see the fish actually eat the fly. You're looking for the disturbance on the water. That's your real key, and that's much bigger than a size 18 or 20 midge. But if you don't want to revert to indicators or nymphs or anything like that, just tying a little bit bigger dry fly on in front of your tunny fly really helps. A lot of times the fish will actually eat that bigger fly because they're just eating. They're sometimes they are pretty picky, but sometimes they're not. So like a size 16 Royal Wolf tied on first, and then 18 inches below it, just some type of Griffin's Gnat, which is like a midge cluster, or just a tiny, tiny Comparadon or Parachute, then you see those flies much better with that big spotter fly.
Yeah, the technique that you guys both described is what Kay Watkins taught me once on a trip in Wyoming, where we were on, let's see, it's Wyoming, right? So we can mention a specific creek. At any rate, it was in western, let's just say western Wyoming, a small little spring creek. And the fish were taking small insects. I couldn't see anything. And Kate told me to do exactly what you guys said. So I think I probably had a size 16 or 14 Ilker caddis on. And then behind that was a dinky little fly of some sort. And it worked like a champ.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Kay, for those of you that don't know Kay Watkins, he was a professor at the university. And he's revered by all of us in Trout Unlimited. He's been in the organization for a long, long time and added a lot of leadership. And as a general rule, he's just a fish hound. Mm-hmm. He just loves to catch fish.
Indeed, he does. Would you guys have any recommendations for someone who is just starting with respect to what equipment would be a good general purpose setup for them to use?
Well, Marty, I'd start out by saying that Trout Unlimited is thought of as a fly fishing organization. It is not. It's a conservation organization, really, to make sure that there's sufficient, cool, clear water in the streams and rivers. But there are an awful lot of fly fishermen that participate in Trout Unlimited. And if somebody wants to get started, there's rod and reel, line combinations you can get from a number of retailers that are $60, $70. If you don't want to invest a lot, just to see if you want to get started, and you probably have another $30, $40 in basic equipment, flies and leaders and some of that kind of stuff, just to do the basics. And if you like it and get into it, obviously, like any hobby, you can spend an awful lot of money. But it doesn't take a lot to get started. And a lot of our members in TU are happy to take somebody
exactly
with them. And a lot of us have extra equipment. They'll loan it out and are happy to share what they know. Occasionally, maybe take you blindfolded to a spot that they think is special and show you how to do it.
Yeah, I would add to that. Just to piggyback on, mentoring is really helpful. Having someone that has fished a lot spend an hour with you is probably equivalent to going out on the water for an entire day by yourself. So if you know someone that really loves to fish, ask them if they would mind helping you. Most, I would say 99% of the fly fishermen I know, we like that. We like to be asked. But beyond that, a good place to get gear is also used gear. And there are lots of sites where people are oftentimes selling gear, and you can get it at a discount price, and it's still in near perfect shape. A good rule of thumb for the Valley is if you're going to buy a new rod and reel, and you're going to fish mainly smaller water, I would suggest maybe starting with a 4-weight, maybe an 8-foot 4-weight. The length of the rod allows you to do some things in tight conditions. And I should say a 9-foot rod is the standard rod. So an 8-foot rod is a little bit shorter. And when you're in creeks and places like that, that are a little tighter, that 8-foot helps. And you don't need the weight of a heavier rod. If you're going to fish a little bit bigger rod, bigger water like the Conejos, fish the Rio Grande or fish lakes, then I would definitely look at a 9-foot rod with a 5-weight line assisting it. But just so the listeners know, they build rods from like 0 weight, which is kind of like a switch in the wind, to they actually make a 13 weight rod that many people use in the saltwater to catch sailfish and tuna. So it's the whole spectrum. Length of rod has only recently in the last 20 years become an interesting thing. And Dwayne mentioned Euro nymphing. I call Euro nymphing contact nymphing, but basically what you're doing, you're using a fly that sinks, so it's under the water, and you need to rely on something to give you an indication of when the fish takes it. So contact nymphing is you use a longer rod, say a 10-foot rod, maybe even 11-foot rod, and almost no fly line at all, and the fly then is underwater, and you have the monofilament all the way to the tip of the rod, and you feel the takes very subtly, sometimes very strongly, but it's just a different way to fish. And that I don't want to muddy the waters right now. So you know, what Dwayne said, and just there's lots of beginner kits. There's many ways you can go at it, and don't hesitate to read.
And in these days, as opposed to when I first started, which was pretty late in my life, really, there are YouTube videos
for you
to watch and get a really good sense of how to make a cast, how to read the water.
Absolutely.
And I can't overemphasize the necessity to practice casting in your backyard or in a local park. Because if you wait until you're on the water and you see something happening, you get all excited and you just flail the water, and that doesn't work. So a little practice is a good thing, too.
Yes.
Yep. Practice on the grass is great, Marty. And then transitioning to a lake, maybe just so you get used to throwing it out on the water. Because when you get to a river, you have the current, you have bushes around you. There's a number of obstacles. And so kind of mastering the casting stroke on dry land and then on a still water is a great way to go.
I couldn't agree more. Yeah.
Excellent. Well, are there any other things you guys want to mention about our local chapter of Trout Unlimited, or just some general ideas of fishing in the San Luis Valley?
Well, I'd love to talk about the chapter just a little bit more.
Okay.
Because I'd like for the general public to know that we really are tackling things across a broad range. We have 11 board members right now, and each one of our board members has an assignment area. So we have a person that's dealing with education, a person dealing with advocacy on the state level through our state chapter, the Bull Moose Committee, which checks in with the state legislature and what's being voted on and moved forward. We're an advocacy organization in that we are trying to just do our best to make people be more aware of the natural world. We're a water organization because we work with Kevin Terry, with our member Kevin Terry that was mentioned, and try to work with our local farmers. We support a number of organizations with monetary donations, including the Alamosa Science Fair. So if anyone thought that we were kind of one-dimensional, I would have to say that's just not true at all. And we have meetings every month. We've gone to a schedule where 1 month we have a serious presentation. It could be on fishing, it could be on travel, it could be on natural resources issues. And those meetings are held at the Alamosa Senior Center. And then the next month, we usually have a social gathering. So we'll meet at one of the local pubs and bring our fly tying gear and visit and tell stories and just have a good time and try to socialize and make connections. So it's a really diverse and fun organization. I'm really proud to be a part of it. I have to tell you, I have the best group of folks around me as a board, and they work together, and we feel we're very successful.
Yeah, and we've had some great partnerships, both public and private. So we partner with the Forest Service, Colorado Parks and Wildlife on some of the physical projects that are done on the stream. Sometimes it's to repair a bank that's eroding. possibly put in rock structures to create more holding water for the fish. But we've also done some things with private organizations in terms of fundraising, and Canales River Anglers has been an amazing partner with us for, gosh, the last 15, 20 years. They do a Superfly fly fishing event in the spring every year and have raised thousands of dollars for us to do projects on the Canales to make that a better fishery. So that's been great. And it's easy to join. The membership for an adult is $35. There's family memberships, youth memberships at $14. And if you join the national organization, they assign you to a chapter in your area. So you get assigned to the San Luis Valley chapter if you live around here. And we have a number of members that live part of the year out of state and have homes in, you know, Creed, South Fork, Antonito, that are also members of our chapter. So we have an interesting group of local folks and then folks that spend summers here.
Yeah, that's right. We've spent a considerable amount of time focusing on trying to have an online presence. So we Zoom all of our formal meetings. And if we can make it work in one of the social settings we do, just so people from out of town and even out of state can log on and participate. So it's,
And if one of the listeners of this podcast would like to get more involved or to become a member of Trout Unlimited, who should they contact? Or is there a website that they should log into?
Yeah, they can go to tu.org, which is the national website. We have a Facebook page for our San Luis Valley chapter, and we have a website for our local chapter as well. And as Doug said, they're welcome to come to a meeting. And
you can send requests for further information to our email address, slvtroutunlimited@gmail.com. And you can call me, Douglas Camp, at 719-588-5524. And I'll be happy to field any questions you have. And if you have questions that I can't answer, I bet you I have a board member that knows something more about it, and I can direct your question to them.
And I want to give some props to Dr. Marty Jones, who has been a member of the chapter for a long time and served as president of our chapter for several years, did a great job. And Marty, we appreciate all your service to the chapter in the past.
Well, thanks. I'm not the longest serving officer, though. That honor goes to Dwayne, who, once the chapter was restarted in the early 90s, he's been on the board ever since in some capacity or the other.
Great group to be part of, and we got a lot of long-time members. Yeah.
By the way, our chapter number is 303, so if you want to sign up and be certain that you get with the correct chapter, use that chapter number. And there's a newsletter that gets put out on a pretty regular basis as well, so if you sign up, you'll be added to the email list for the newsletter and get updates on fishing information, project updates, schedules for meetings and projects.
That's right.
And National TU has a great magazine called Trout, and lots of good stuff in there as well.
Yeah, in fact, just in the last maybe 2 years, I think, John Gierak, if you're familiar with him, he's had a story in every single issue of Trout in the last couple of years.
Yep.
Great.
Do we have time to talk about fishing a little bit?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I was going to encourage everybody to definitely start to get out now, and where maybe in August they might not fish as much, definitely consider August fishing. I have a sneaky feeling, and it's not scientific, it's only the twitch in my right hand, that the hopper fishing is going to be really good this summer. Lots of grasshoppers. And if we just get a little bit of rain, those rainy afternoons could be dynamite fishing this year.
Yeah, Doug gave you his cell number, so call him. He'll tell you when and where those hoppers are.
He might not give you the where in terms of specifics, but he might say, a particular river or stream.
Yeah, that's all you need.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Great. Well, I've been speaking with Doug Camp and Dwayne Bussey, both avid fishermen and board members for the San Luis Valley chapter of Trout Unlimited. Guys, thanks a lot. It's been a joy to have you here on the Outdoor Citizen podcast.
Thank you, Marty.
Thank you, Marty. We appreciate it.
And we'll be back in just a few minutes.
Climb aboard the Cumbres and Toltec Scenic Railroad. The Cumbres and Toltec operates on a 64 miles of track between Antonito, Colorado and Chalma, New Mexico, taking passengers over the San Juan Mountains to the Conejos Valley. Regular daily passenger service begins June 3rd through October 21st and will run 6 days a week, Tuesday through Sunday. Book now on America's highest, longest, and most authentic steam-operated railroad. Visit our website at cumbrestoltec.com.
Welcome back to the Outdoor Citizen. We're going to give you some upcoming outdoor events. Remember, the Valley Calendar is the most comprehensive listing of events from across the San Luis Valley. Be sure to check it out and stay up to date at alamosacitizen.com. Here's a look at some of the rest of July. Latino Conservation Week is July 15th through the 23rd. Here in Alamosa, Valeria Tafoya, an intern with U.S. Fish and Wildlife, is leading a July 22nd Nature Day at the Blanca Vista Park. The Day of the Community will consist of three activities starting at 11 a.m. A nature walk, lunch, and water activities such as floating and kayaking are planned. All ages are welcome. San Luis Valley Great Outdoors is hosting weekly walks in Alamosa and Monte Vista aimed at older adults and residents. On Tuesdays in Alamosa, you're invited to meet at the Alamosa Senior Citizen Center at Cole Park for a walk along the river and the park. On Wednesdays, the meeting place in Monte Vista is at the Legacy Assisted Living Center, and the walk takes place on the Ray and Colette Scaff Nature Trail. Each walk starts at 9:30 a.m. and goes until 11 a.m. The next walks in Monte Vista are July 12th, 19th, and 26th. In Alamosa, the next walks are July 18th and 25th. San Luis Valley Great Outdoors also is sponsoring bike rides on Wednesdays in Alamosa. July 12th, for example, will be at the Alamosa Riparian Park, and that starts at 6 p.m. On Tuesdays, the mountain bike riders go out west of town. For example, July 18th, meet at the Stone Quarry parking lot at 6 p.m. For a calendar of events so that you can learn more about the schedule for the walks and the bike rides, go to slvgo.com/events. Volunteers for Outdoor Colorado have a couple of upcoming engagements. July 15th and July 16th is a woman-only habitat restoration at Windy Point. On July 29th and July 30th, Moon Pass Habitat Restoration will begin. To learn more or register for our project, visit the site volunteer.voc.org, or you can send an email to Katie, K-A-T-I-E, at voc.org. There's a couple of upcoming runs to tell you about. The Manassa Pioneer Days 5K is July 22nd, beginning at 8 a.m. The start and finish line is adjacent to Jack Dempsey Park in Manassa. To register, go to runsignup.com and search for Manassa Pioneer Days 5K. On Sunday, July 23rd, the Stations of the Cross 10K run is scheduled in the town of San Luis. To register, go to raceentry.com and choose San Luis CO. On every episode of The Outdoor Citizen, we'll have an outdoor correspondent report from someone around the San Luis Valley. Here's our latest field report from Mike Henderson.
Hey everyone, it's Mike Henderson for The Outdoor Citizen reporting. Just got back from a mountain bike ride. I did Grayback from Del Norte this morning. So you just take Pinos Creek Road out of Del Norte and then onto Forest Service Road 330 and then up 330A to the summit of Grayback. It's around 12,600 feet and about 5,000 feet of climbing out of Del Norte. I took my mountain bike and started around 8 o'clock to try to beat the heat and the traffic on that road. Got really hot, but it was a good training to get some of that heat training in and also the climbing. And then was a fast ascent on the way down. Roads are in good shape. Saw a bikepacking crew out of the Durango area out there. And lots of ATVs on the road, but was without incident. So that's good. Everybody's sharing the road out there. So that's about it. Talk to you all again.
As the days get longer and warmer, we'd love to hear from you. Record an audio file on your smartphone and send it to us. We would enjoy seeing a photograph also. You can email info@alamosacitizen.com or text the audio file and photo to 720-891-6759 with your name for credit. Now we have some conditions and measurements for you to keep you up to date on what it's looking like out there. The latest stream flows entering the week for the upper Rio Grande, the gauge in Del Norte is reading 1,010 CFS. Monte Vista is reading 356 CFS. And Alamosa is reading a discharge of 295 CFS. On the Canejos River, the gauge at Magoti is reading 589 CFS. It's pretty high for this time of year. This is The Outdoor Citizen. We'll be right back after a quick break.
Hi, my name is Valerie Tafoya, and I'm an intern at the Baca National Wildlife Refuge, and I'm here to talk about a local event we are hosting in Alamosa in celebration of Latino Conservation Week. And so I would like to invite you all to our first day of the community. We'll be going on a nature walk, having lunch together, and doing some water activities in celebration of Latino Conservation Week. Latino Conservation Week helps break down barriers for Latino and Hispanic communities to access public lands and waters, encourage new opportunities for engagement, and inspire the next generation of environmental stewards. Our event, Day of the Community, will consist of three different activities at Blanca Vista Park on Sunday, July 23rd. Starting at 11 a.m., we'll begin with a nature walk in Blanca Vista Park. The address is 6455 North River Road in Alamosa. We'll meet at the picnic pavilion located next to the parking lot. We'll have giveaway items, water, sunscreen, insect repellent, and binoculars to lend out for the walk. Please wear comfortable clothes and shoes and bring a water bottle. At 1 p.m., we'll have lunch together. We'll have food from a super taco and drinks available. After lunch, there will be water activities that are hosted by the Alamosa Recreation Center as part of their weekly event, Weekends on the Rio. There will be paddleboarding and kayaking available. We'll have a limited number of reserved tickets for anyone who attends. And then join us for any of the three events and stay as long as you like, although we ask that you please arrive on time for directions. No experience is necessary. People of all ages and families are welcome. For any questions, call or text me at 303-378-1245. And just to repeat my phone number, it is 303-378-1245. My name is Valerie Tafuria, and we hope to see you there.
Welcome back to The Outdoor Citizen. Now for some outdoor news items to keep you up to date. Colorado Parks and Wildlife plans to introduce a native Rio Grande cutthroat trout in Rito Hondo Reservoir west of Creed. And this is how they plan to do it. The reservoir has been lowered for dam repair work, and with the water level lowered, CPW will do what it calls a rotenone treatment to the reservoir to remove non-native brook trout and rainbows with the objective of stocking native Rio Grande cuts in the summer of 2024. Doug Camp was talking about this project in our earlier segment. CPW aquatic biologist Estevan Vigil said the lake is highly productive and will have the ability to grow large fish. This work will begin the week of July 24th. So if you want to catch some trout out of Rio Rito Hondo Reservoir, I recommend you do it before July 24th. Home Lake reopened to fishing on July 1st after it was closed from an accidental release of herbicides into the lake. Colorado Parks and Wildlife tells us the investigation into how this happened is ongoing. Last week marked a milestone when Colorado was drought-free for the first time since 2019, according to the U.S. Drought Monitor. Higher than average snowfall and precipitation created the perfect conditions. However, over the last 22 years, data shows that the months of droughtless conditions are followed by spans of relentless drought. This year's El Niño is expected to drive warmer conditions into the winter. The Rio Grande National Forest Service provided updates to some of the current projects it has underway. In the Conejos Peak Ranger District, Forest Service Road 250 from Horka to Jasper is seeing increased traffic and the surface has been deteriorating. The district encourages motorists to travel slower to help reduce the development of potholes and washboards. The Rio Grande National Forest Road Crew in Conejos County plan to conduct normal blading of the road a couple more times this year. And Stunner Bridge is expected to begin the replacement process in early September. The project will take up to a full year to complete, with access on Forest Road 250 over the Alamosa River being only minimally impacted. The old bridge will serve as temporary access while the new bridge is constructed adjacent to it. This project will be the culmination of a nearly 10-year-long project of replacing several bridges in Alamosa Canyon. In the Divide Ranger District at Hamilton Reservoir, the Rio Grande National Forest and the Bureau of Land Management are conducting improvements to the emergency spillway. Access to the outlet of the dam is now closed for public safety. The southern side of the dam is still accessible to the public. Visitors to Million Reservoir will need to stay on the south side and be aware of heavy equipment in the area. This project is expected to take 8 weeks. And finally, are you in need of a job? Our friends at the San Luis Valley Ecosystem Council are looking to hire a part-time communications manager. Send an email to Isabel, that's Isabel, at slvec.org if you're interested. And that ends this episode of The Outdoor Citizen. Again, our thanks to Don Richmond for the music and Daniel Boyce for the bird sounds. We'll be back here on July 25th when we talk to SLV Go's Esteban Vigil and the Rio Grande Farm Park's Armando Vigil. Until next time, thanks for listening to The Outdoor Citizen. Get outside and enjoy the out of doors.